Yep, I'm good.
Okay. Hello, welcome to the At the Hive podcast, part of the SB Nation network of podcasts. This is your host, Jonathan, and I'm joined by Chase. Chase, how are you?
I am doing very well. I'm excited to get back on the mic here and talk some Charlotte Hornets basketball, which not really good yet, but it's different.
Shout out to, kudos to anyone that cares enough still to, actually listen to this.
Thank you for everybody that is still here listening to, an hour-long podcast about the 30th ranked offense and consistently a bottom four defense. Oh, they're up to 26 now. They were 27th the other day, so we're improving. Like I said,
I'm gonna be honest. I didn't even realize the Hornets defense was that bad. I've been so fixated on how bad the offense has been when I've been kind of studying things and researching things that I didn't even realize the defense is also one of the worst in the league.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't really almost doesn't matter as much because they're not scoring enough anyway to beat most teams. Though that has changed a little bit recently, but in general they're not really up to pace yet. So the defense is a work in progress.
Yeah, the Hornets in the last five have the where are they? Number 21 ranked offense.
Hey, there we go. We're almost in the middle section of the league, not the bottom third.
There's a 136 point performance with a 51 point quarter thrown in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess to kind of start on that, did you see the thing that I wrote on Christmas Day or the day after Christmas? I can't remember when I published it. I wrote it on an airplane. That's a cool little fun fact behind the scenes. Where the Hornets, we talked about it on the last time we talked, where their shot profile technically is good because they shoot very few mid-range jump shots. They shoot lots of shots in the paint and lots of threes, but they have the worst effective field goal percentage in the league, and they just cannot make open shots. And I feel kind of bad for Steve Clifford in a sense, because there is an element of the offense just isn't as flowy and cohesive as it was last year, but at a certain point, open shots are open shots, right?
Yeah, I mean, and you would think that with the general adage that, shooting is mostly luck and, there's a lot of variance, it goes up and down. Yeah. You'd think that that would eventually bounce back for the Hornets, but it really hasn't yet, other than in very, very short bursts or individual games. They haven't really had a stretch of 10 games where more than one or two guys shot well at once.
Yeah, well, you're a Celtics guy. They had a historic offense for a lot of the year, and then the three-point shooting has just suddenly tanked, hasn't it, for a month?
Yeah, right. They in the last month or so, their shooters have pretty much fallen off of a cliff with the exception of Jaylen Brown. And what was the best offensive rating in NBA history through probably the first month or so of the season is, I mean, they're still number one in the league I think they're tied with Denver or something like that, but no, obviously not going to set a historic pace anymore. And that's what shooting variance can do to you. It can make you, the best offense the world has ever seen to, just a normal good NBA offense.
And I talked about that in a little bit of the in the offseason. I wrote a thing where I showed kind of everybody's the Hornets players' 3-point shooting percentage as the season went on, and then in 5 and 10 game samples. And I didn't publish it, but I looked at other people, other players too, just out of curiosity, guys that had reputations for being really good shooters. And shooting, just by nature, it just oscillates. It goes up and down. Players get hot. They're feeling good. They make all their shots. And then they have a night where, for whatever reason, it doesn't work. And then they lose confidence and the shots stop going in. And that's just basketball. But the Hornets just have stayed down. It's just been bad. It's like we had that stretch last year for a month where they couldn't make a shot. And they randomly broke out for that record-setting game against the Pacers in the middle of it. And then they continued to shoot poorly outside of that. That's basically been this whole season.
Yeah, that game was actually a pretty good microcosm of the year, because it is there, you said, but, yeah. And in that article too highlighted the base level principles are there. The player, I mean, realistically, the players are there too. They just haven't been fully healthy, really. They've been, just been unhealthy in a myriad of different ways, like throughout the season, yeah. just missing different key players instead of like having them all back at once and missing like an end of bench rotation player or something. But I mean, it's, it also, part of it is just like inexplicable. Like LaMelo in his return has basically proved himself as one of the league's elite shooters. Terry had that 39 point game, but other than that, there's like literally nobody that is shooting well on the team.
Right.
Like PJ Washington's at 35%. That's the only player that's close to league average. Like everybody else is 34% or under. And a lot of these guys are on decent volume too. So it's not like everybody's just like, you know, going 1 for 3 every game and tanking their percentage. Like,
no, yeah,
it's very inexplicable. I really have not been able to find a reason for it yet.
Yeah, and there's some nuance to like the shot profile maybe not being as good as it looks, because like the Hornets are the most blocked team in the NBA, at least they were the last time I looked. It feels like there's like a little bit of this kind of brute force mentality to it of like just getting the paint shots good, and then it's just like, yeah, but also like if the paint shots are like heavily contested floaters over rim protectors, then maybe they're not the best. Which it feels like the Hornets are doing a lot of this year, of like kind of these like hopeful finishes in traffic in the paint, which is hurting their percentage. But that's still, the 3-point shooting is just like like you said, it's just inexplicable. Like every single player is shooting a worse percentage from three than they did last year.
Yeah, like that's, what is the likelihood of that happening? Like it does, it's got to be very, 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 very slim.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Like somebody has to be like, everybody has ups and downs. The odds of them all being down in the same season is just crazy. And it's like Steve Clifford shoulders some of that blame in the sense of like this, you know, the system, but I think the injuries are probably a bigger part of that, and it's just bad luck. On the injury front, that's been another kind of funny, just stupid luck the Hornets are having this year, where it's like, in order to get a player to return from the injury report, you must sacrifice another player. Like, it's been happening, like, on the game. It's like, hey, guys, like, Dennis Smith Jr. is back, and then, like, Gordon Hayward strained his hamstring. Like, that game. Like, the same game. That's happened a couple times this year. So now, Dennis Smith Jr. and Cody Martin are back, and Kelly Oubre and Gordon Hayward are out. I don't know if that's a net win or loss, or what do you think for...
I mean, honestly, like, I don't even, I guess it would probably be a net win, because the offense realistically is only going to get better if players just, like we've just said, like, just start making more shots in whatever way that, you know, becomes possible. Like, that's probably the only thing that's really going to make them better. They're probably not acquiring anybody at the trade deadline that bolsters their offense or anything like that. So I think getting the Dennis Smith Jr. back for the point of attack defense, which, as we have seen, is LaMelo Ball's biggest weakness right now by a pretty comfortable margin. I think that that's definitely going to help as he kind of works his way back in. And Cody Martin as well is going to help with that. But he's just, in general, going to need to do a lot defensively, I think, to make up for the other players that are like 6'6 and under in the Hornets lineup not being great defenders.
I feel like from a basketball success standpoint, it's probably kind of a wash. But I think in terms of like where the season's at, I think from a watchability standpoint, I prefer this one. Gordon Hayward's like just kind of, he's been not as bad as he's been like treated this year, but he's also just boring if nothing else, and not that great. And then Kelly Oubre has been better this year, but he's not, for me at least, not like an aesthetically pleasing basketball player to watch. He's been better than he was last year because he's been more aggressive attacking the paint and stuff. But I find his basketball awareness kind of cringy sometimes. And it's Dennis Smith Jr., Cody Martin, who are like the opposite of that, especially Cody Martin, I think makes it more easy on the eyes, I think.
Yeah, it's a much more palatable, like, poor offensive performance, I guess, like, is one way to put it. Like,
it's like they're making the right decisions to miss shots instead of just kind of chucking stuff up.
Yeah, right. And I definitely think I think you're right about it being like a wash in terms of wins and losses. Because, yeah, I mean, the only thing that's going to help the Hornets in any way would be to have all of these good players that the front office and coaching staff were planning on having available for at least the majority of the season. But I mean, we'll see if we get that at any point. The positive thing to me, at least, is Hayward has been listed as doubtful instead of just out. So that at least is like somewhat of a short-term thing. And then the only player you'll have missing from your normal rotation would be Kelly Oubre. And hopefully he'll be back in about a month-ish from right now, like around the trade deadline time All-Star game.
Yeah, which even then, I don't know how long, if he continues to be a Hornet after he comes back from injury.
Yeah, I mean, if the Hornets are going to make any deadline move, that would probably be, yeah, he would be included. What do you think about the prospects of like his injury and his trade value? I feel like a lot of people are like pretty split on what that might do.
I don't know. I feel like no team wants to trade for a player that's currently injured unless it's like a real obvious established difference maker. But I think you can get, like, it's not like Kelly Oubre is shooting well anyway, and so what you get out of Kelly Oubre is not necessarily super impacted by like his hands. Like, oh, is he gonna be able to make threes? It's like, I mean, he probably wouldn't be able to anyway. He's gonna try, but he's not gonna consistently make him. So I think the Hornets can still get something out of him. If not, maybe the market probably cools a little bit, but I don't think it completely tanks it. I don't think he's like untradeable now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It's like,
you acquire
he's
him,
gonna be healthy for the stretch run now too. He wouldn't have like, right, a lingering issue.
Right, like you acquire him and he's probably ready, not too far off of a timeline that you would have if you like wanted to ease him into the lineup or the rotation anyway. Like he's the timelines kind of line up. So and he's probably the most obvious trade candidate. Mason Plumlee's been on that too. We'll talk about them more later in the show. The other thing I guess to talk about, the only two I guess bright spots right now are LaMelo Ball and Mark Williams. I think LaMelo Ball is kind of LaMelo Ball at this point, right? Like he's a really good shooter, just like we all predicted coming into the league. And he stopped fouling. Other than that, like, good job, kid.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's really not much to other than the fouling, which I think it's such a weird problem for, like, a guard that is taller and longer than most of the other guards that he defends. But mm-hmm. I think it's just, like, an overzealous, like, trying to make a play type of thing, or, like, hasn't quite learned how to, like, grift the refs in the way that a lot of other stars have.
I mean this is biased, but he does seem to get a pretty tough whistle.
Oh, he like, definitely does.
Of the amount of times he gets knocked down. Yeah. Both offensively in terms of like how many times he gets knocked around and doesn't get the benefit of the doubt, and then defensively, like against the Pacers, he fouled out and it felt like, not that there any of them I could say were like not a good, like were the incorrect call, but there's two or three of them that players get away with that stuff without whistles all the time.
Oh yeah. And I mean, like, I think a lot of people will get upset, particularly about the one that he fouled out on, like sticking his leg out on that three and stuff. But like, I don't know. Everyone does that. Like a lot of players do that and then get the call. Like, I don't know. Like if him doing that and getting the call there would have been like very, like that would have been good. Like everyone would have been like, wow, great play. He drew a foul on a three. Like, when they needed it, but obviously it didn't work out that way. And I think, you know, when he's 26, like it'll probably work out in his favor rather than fouling out when he, you know, like he did now.
It's very strange. Like I watch, like Trae Young and James Harden and even Devin Booker is like sneaky underrated this, where he just kind of drives to the basket and then like and then he just makes contact on the way to the basket, even if it seems rather like inconsequential and like, yep, that's foul. And LaMelo Ball kind of seems like he actually has to be like hacked at to get these calls. Like he seems to get very few like blocks called against him or like body contact calls against him, which part of it's the way he kind of avoids it. But still, there's a lot of times it feels like he could get these whistles. He's just not.
Yeah, he does definitely try to avoid contact a little bit. And that's probably because he's still, I mean, he's probably always going to be like a relatively thin guy. He doesn't need to be like 6'6" and jacked or whatever, but he's definitely not quite as strong, obviously, as a lot of the players, the centers that are standing under the rim, but even the players that are guarding him sometimes can get under him and bother him a little bit at that. But I think it also doesn't help. His rim finishing in general is like pretty poor, especially for a guard that takes at least a reasonable amount of shots there. That is almost as bad from a team-wide perspective as the three-point shooting. I mean, Mark Williams has also been the bright spot of this year, but him and LaMelo are, other than Bryce McGowan's, who's only taken 13 shots at the rim this year, are the two lowest percentile rim finishers on the team. So I think that from the two building blocks on this team, that is like combined something that needs to be worked on significantly over the next like couple years for them to reach their like full potential, even though I think they're both going to be fine, even if they're like, you know, not great at it in their entire career. But yeah, if they got really good at that one skill, then that would take this team a long way.
Yeah. On Mark Williams, been very good. The team defense with him on the floor has been really, really good. Offensively, he still has like, I feels like just like a comfort thing. Right, like the skill is there. It just kind of like the game needs to slow down for him some, but he's every bit of what he was advertised as. Right, like he's getting every rebound. His rebounding rates are insane, offensively and defensively. His touch is really good. He's like not Mason Plumlee level passer, but he makes the right reads and stuff. And I think you'll see more of that as he gets more comfortable. So like I think he's been worth the wait. I think it would be nice to see him get a few more minutes, but I guess we'll get there, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that'll be a good discussion for the later segment in the show when we talk about Plumlee and the trade potential, because as of now, I mean, that kind of seems like the only way that both Mark and Nick are ever going to play, because Mark right, like both of them are good, right? And you can't, like all three of them are good. Like Mark, Mason, and Nick Richards have all been very good this year. You can't play 3 7-footers in one lineup unless you're going to split the minutes in like some really weird way and play them all like 16 minutes the whole game or something like that.
Right.
And that's just like not practical at all. So I am interested to see how that changes throughout the year, because I mean, nobody is giving Steve Clifford a reason to sit them, but he has to sit somebody.
Right. Yeah. Mason Plumlee kind of threw a wrench into that by like not being terrible. By the way, I think you use cleaning the glass to pull up those rim finishing numbers, I'm assuming.
Yeah. I pulled them up.
It's so blue.
Oh yeah. Everything. It's just like for anybody that has a cleaning the glass membership, or for anybody that doesn't have one, it basically shows the shooting percentages in like a percentile. It has a number surrounded by like a square that's either filled in blue or orange, or like some like off-white color. Like blue is bad.
Between blue to orange, yeah.
Yeah, like orange is good. And as one could probably surmise from watching the Hornets games this year, there's a whole lot of blue when you click on like the shooting percentages page. The funniest part about this thing is the whole year, everything has been bad with shooting, but Kelly Oubre's mid-range shooting is in the 98th percentile in the league. He's 23 or long mid-range shooting, so shots basically that are inside the arc but further away than the free throw line, like a long two that is supposed to be terrible. He's shooting 23 out of 39 on total attempts for those this year. So there is one extremely minuscule bright spot, I guess, outside of LaMelo Ball too, but LaMelo is just always going to be a good shooter. But other than that, it is a whole lot of blue.
Yeah. There are some other things to talk about. I think we'll talk about them on the other side of this break. So we'll do Buzz and Wasn't, and then we'll kind of look ahead to the rest of the season. So we'll be right back. Welcome back to the At the Hive podcast. This is Jonathan. I'm joined by Chase. We're still here. It's time for Buzzin' and Wasn't. Chase, do you want to start with who's buzzing?
Yes. I'm going to warn everybody. Most people will likely, maybe not get like upset, but might roll their eyes or groan or just turn off the podcast. But please stick with us. My buzzin' is one Mason Plumlee.
Oh, that was going to be mine too.
Oh, okay, perfect. I'm glad that's perfect.
Well, it's just a podcast. Yeah. He's been really good.
He has been like very, very good. And that is exactly what we want him to be. Like, we don't want him to be so bad that he can't play. Because if you don't want to see him again, you want him to be good so the Hornets are incentivized to trade him for like any team that offers a reasonable offer for like someone who would be a backup center and is someone they already only acquired for a second round pick. So the value has been skyrocketing lately. Yes. For the Plum Dog Millionaire.
Yeah, I was about to say something on the right before the break about the shooting percentage. Along with Kelly Oubre, Mason Plumlee is 6-for-10 on long mid-range jump shots this year.
Just as we all would have expected.
Right, with the left hand kind of like legs splayed out, fading backwards as he shoots it, but he's making it work. Mason Plumlee, since December 1st, 20 games, is averaging 13 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 block per game, shooting 71% from the field and 63% from the free throw line.
Sounds to me like there's not a whole lot to complain about, but I don't know. You wouldn't be able to tell.
It's like that's not just like decent. Like that's like really, really good.
Yeah, that is highly effective starting caliber NBA center play. Not like, oh, right, he's got to be a good role player. He's a good backup.
Yeah.
We just have to start him. He's good as a starter. He could get more touches and probably still be good. Like that's how. It's wild that we live in this world, but it's true. Right.
No, and I like part of me. There was a part of me for a while that was getting frustrated by it because like I wanted to see Nick Richards, I want to see Mark Williams, and as long as Mason Plumlee is playing well enough to keep his job, he's going to keep his job. And it now it's just kind of like funny, to watch. It's just like, oh, Mason Plumlee's just like the best player on the team now. And then like you said, it also. He's pumping up, him and Kelly have done it, if nothing else, have pumped up the trade value for themselves this year in this disaster of a season. But like now, if I don't know kind of like where teams are off the top of my head, I didn't research all that, but like I think a team, if someone gets hurt, can convince themselves like we can get Mason Plumlee to fill in and bolster that center rotation.
Yeah, I mean, like I've been thinking about this for a long time. The Clippers, this doesn't work for salary, so obviously a smarter NBA GM is going to work this out in some way, but nobody come at me in the comments because this doesn't work. If the Hornets can find a way to get Mason Plumlee to the Clippers and get Terrence Mann, who like doesn't really play when they're fully healthy, just back to the Hornets in return, like that would be a great trade for both teams and would probably fill a need for both teams. It's not possible just straight up, but
right.
That has been my personal goal, is to make that deal in some sort of framework, because I mean there are plenty of teams that could use a good like rotational or like substitute starting center for the stretch run this year.
Yeah, I'm trying to like look at the other ones real quick. I'm thinking like the Clippers have nobody. ESPN has on second on their depth chart has Nicholas Batum as their backup center, which is obviously not correct, but that kind of shows you the state of their center rotation.
Yeah, I honestly like that might be. I mean, Moses Brown is on a two-way contract, and he's their like other tall player, basically.
Yeah,
except and for like Zubac. Morris. Yeah,
and yeah. So there you go.
He's like Robert Covington,
future Clipper.
There we go.
Yeah, Robert Covington.
We'll speak it into existence. But did you see that stat that Hornets PR tweeted about Mason Plumlee this afternoon?
Mm-mm, I didn't see that. Not today, if it was today.
So have you ever seen that screen grab of the like the Thad Young stat threshold that like compares him with like LeBron James and Larry Bird and Michael Jordan?
I think so. It's like a very specific with a lot of stats, like points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage type of thing, and then it's
absurd.
Hall of Famers, and then Thad Young.
Yeah, so the Thad Young, because this ties into the Mason Plumlee thing. So the Thad Young one is players with 800 games to average 13.5 points, 5.9 rebounds, 1.4 steals, 49.5% from the field, and 30% from the three. The five players in NBA history that have done that to the point when this graphic was created, probably like 5 to 10 years ago. I don't know about now, but that was Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, and Thaddeus Young were the five players that had done that.
I love those so much.
It's incredible. I love like little like weird stat like pulls like that. But the Hornets did one of their own. So Hornets center Mason Plumlee is the 15th player in NBA history to record at least 125 total offensive rebounds, 250 total defensive rebounds, and 150 total assists in his first 41 games of the season. It's the 31st overall instance, the 15th different player. I'm going to read off a couple of the players that have also accomplished this feat in the first 41 games of the season. Domantas Sabonis, multiple all-time all-star.
Which, by the way, just to preview, that's the worst name on this list.
That's the worst? Yes. It gets much better. It gets much better. Anthony Davis, obviously, before he got hurt this year, was one of the best players in the league. Perennial DPOY when he's healthy. Andre Drummond, arguably the best rebounder of all time. Kevin Garnett, NBA champion, elite NBA player. Shaquille O'Neal, arguably one of the best centers of all time. And then we're going to go a little bit further down the list, a little bit later into history. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. This is among the company, and that's not even it. It's Charles Barkley, Karl Malone, Chris Webber, Bill Walton, Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah, Kevin Love. Like, those are all the players
That's the entire list. Is Domantas Sabonis, Anthony Davis, Andre Drummond, Joakim Noah, Kevin Love, Pau Gasol, Kevin Garnett, Shaq, Barkley, Webber, Michael Thompson, Kareem, and Bill Walton.
And Mason
Plumlee.
Like, it is so awesome. It's incredible. That might be better than the Thad Young one because it's overwhelmingly specific. 125 offensive rebounds in the first 41 games is, like, remarkable. It's so specific, but it works. Like, if you can put your name on a list with all of these other players, you are doing something very, very, very right. So good. Congrats to Mesa. He has been killing it this year. Like, unironically has been really, really good.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer based on
obviously. Literally everyone else on that list has at least a chance, if not is already in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Good job, Hornets PR. That's how you do your – that's how you PR right
yes,
there.
Yes, no, exactly.
Buzzing Hornets PR.
that is so awesome. I loved that stat so much when I saw it.
That's great. So, yeah, Mason Plumlee, been very good. Oddly enough, and I love the jump shots and the just awkwardness of it all. And then hopefully it helps the Hornets in the long run if they can get some sort of asset out of it. Or wasn't. Do you have a Hornet or do you have something else? Because I went outside the Hornets to talk
about.
Ooh,
okay, okay. You go first because yours is probably more interesting then.
Mine's it was very born out of the Hornets win on Friday. I wasn't as Thanasis Antetokounmpo. I did not realize how bad he is.
Oh yeah.
Outside of being Giannis's brother. Like, so cuz he did the thing where like he's like the goofy dude in pickup basketball that like no one wants to play with cuz he's just like recklessly running around like beating people up and like not being good at basketball. And as I pulled up his stats, because I feel like he's been pretty consistently like appears in games for the Bucks and stuff, and his numbers are like some of the worst numbers I've ever seen for an NBA player.
Yeah, he's only played 36 minutes this year. Like, Udonis Haslam has played more minutes than that.
His VORP this year is minus 10. Or his box
How do you
is
do
B,
that?
His BPM. His box plus minus is minus 10. His VORP has been, his value over replacement level player has been negative every single year of his career, other than his rookie year with the Knicks where he played 6 minutes. He's shooting 15% from three for his career on about two attempts per 36 minutes. And yeah, I just like watched him play and he shot like a couple threes against the Hornets and he missed them by a combined like 4 feet on two attempts. he poked somebody in the eye, I think, and then he like basically destroyed Terry Rozier on a fast break layup for like no reason. I don't know if you saw that.
I didn't get to see the Bucks game, but
Terry's going on a fast break. The game's like well decided. I don't even know why the Hornets still had their starters in. As you can tell, the Bucks had given up. They had Thanasis Antetokounmpo in, and Terry, he's got like a 1-on-1 fast break, and he kind of euro steps, tries to euro step around the defender, and Thanasis just like full speed leaps in the air. Doesn't he really have like the intent to block the shot? Because he doesn't like lift his arms to block it. He ends up just like throwing like a flying knee into Terry Rozier's back and lands like all his body weight on top of Terry. And Terry, I think, like banged his knee into the floor and stuff and looked like he might actually be hurt kind of bad. And it was one of the most absurd plays of the game. And then like the Hornets are by 30 with like 2 minutes left when this happens. Like it was just an absurd basketball play. And then, like I said, he shot a couple three pointers that did not even get look like they were heading in the direction of the basket. Bucks clearly just trying to keep their superstar happy, because watching that was just like that was not NBA basketball. And so I wanted to talk about how funny that was and how just like dreadful of an appearance that was for an NBA player against NBA players.
Yeah, I mean he's shooting 11.1% effective field goal percentage from the year. So
yeah,
that's pretty much, that puts a bow on the whole thing. I mean, there's literally like no positive, because his numbers are bad. He's out there trying to kill Terry. We just can't have that. We can't have it. But my
wasn't. Yeah.
All right. So this, I mean, I had to dig back a little bit for this, because I didn't want to be like too like negative, downtrodden, like, oh, my wasn't is losing because the Hornets aren't good this year. My wasn't was that West Coast road trip they had.
Oh, yeah.
Over the Christmas like period from like I think a little bit before to like December 27th or whatever was when they played the Warriors. It should be illegal to start a sporting event at like 10:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is basically what the time it is by the time like a game tips off from all the pregame festivities. That's a crime. Or at least it should be if it's not. Because it's so tough, and it's not. I sound like super old and washed right now, but like if you have to get up in the morning, like you can't watch that game. And then if you don't have League Pass, which not everyone does, because I mean, if you have cable in Charlotte, you probably just watch it on Bally Sports, and then there you go. But
yeah,
if you don't have League Pass, you can't watch it again, or unless you got to sit and wait for like when it's re-aired on TV. And
the Hornets aren't doing that.
No, exactly. It's such a hassle. So we got to just bump it down to like 9:30, 9:45. Help those of us who are really bad at staying up late to watch the basketball games that their team is playing without, you know, having to like watch it back the next morning and not being able to feel all the energy and all that type of thing, and not being able to follow along with everything in the same way because everybody's already talked about it like 12 hours ago. But this is definitely a me problem, but.
I finished the recap of the Lakers game in Los Angeles at 4:15 in the morning.
See, that's what I mean. Like they're making you like, stay up till 4:15 in the morning.
To be fair, I watched it. I can't remember what I was doing. It was December 23rd. Like it was like a holiday, but I didn't have a chance to have my computer with me until I came home. And had to like rewatch the recording of it and like trying to not fall asleep because it was almost 4 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, because the game started so late that it messed up all the other plans. Like it when the game started at 7, I can generally get, even if I have other stuff going on, I can generally make things work and finish at a reasonable hour. But when they start at 10:30, that goes out the window.
Yeah, I mean, the reasonable hour is only like an hour and a half after that.
Right.
Like, the game won't even be over.
Especially the 10:30 start. Like, that's a 7:30 local start. Like, Hornets games don't start at 7:30. Start your games at 7 local time, no later.
Yeah, like, yeah, right. Like, then the families are out of there by, like, 9:15.
Yeah, and then it's 10 o'clock over here. And we could, as you know, then the game's over by midnight, and it's a little bit easier to stomach for the layman.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was funny looking at the schedule and seeing those times, like, just 10:30, 10:30, 10:30, like, back to back to back. Because they play the back-to-back games in Los Angeles, and they're too cool to have their games at 7 o'clock local time.
Yeah, thankfully I think that's the last game of the season, or those were the last games of the season that start later than like 9. I think when they play like Utah and Phoenix at 9. After that, everything's at 7 or 8 or in the afternoon.
Yeah, they always, I mean, because they do the road trips kind of in chunks, and it feels like a lot of Eastern Conference teams play the LA back-to-back thing like that. Just because I think it's, you know, easy for travel and stuff. Especially the lower brand recognition teams, because like, you know, like the Celtics are not going to necessarily do that because that's two primetime opportunities the NBA might be looking for. But like teams like the Hornets or the Thunder, or not the Thunder because it's West Coast, but like the Hornets or the Magic, basically the Southeast Division except for the Heat, they're probably just like, yeah, just throw them to LA back to back, get those out of the way, and be done with it. So yeah, those, that Phoenix Utah back to, those are back to back too on a Monday Tuesday. That's, other than that, everything is reasonable. A couple one, I like the 1 o'clock games too coming up.
I love afternoon games. Those are so nice. Especially, I mean, if there's no football in like late February, March, April, so why not just kick back and relax?
Remember, I think it was, I can't remember if this lasted to the Borrego era, but a few years ago, if the Hornets played in the afternoon, it was like a guaranteed 25-point loss.
Yeah, I think that definitely lasted into the Borrego era. I think it was when it was like the Devontae Graham, Terry Rozier team, I think, especially. That was
really, I remember. I do remember it at least dated back to when they made the playoffs last, because I remember they kind of choked away that series lead against the Heat, and then the NBA like schedules like game 7 is like 1 o'clock on Sunday. You're like, well, there goes the season. and then they lost by like 35. So which that might be a good thing this year, because you know we're all in for Wimby or Scoot. So we should be. At least as a fan, from a fan perspective. And I hate this position as a fan. Because like I want them to do well, but I also like I don't know what to do when I'm watching these games as a fan. Right? Like if they win, like I guess cool, but also like I kinda want them to lose, but then I can't sit here and like cheer for them to miss shots and like lose the game. So I don't really know how to handle it.
Honestly, I've over the last like year or two, my view of tanking has, for lack of a better word, tanked. And I pretty much am like philosophically against it at this point. So like, I honestly I'm still just being like, yeah, like win as much as you want. Because realistically, it's not going to happen like all that often anyway. Like we already know that.
Right.
And yeah, it's
well established.
Yeah. Right. And it's not like it's anyone's fault in particular. Like it's just a mess of things that have all gone wrong for various like uncontrollable or controllable reasons. And that's just how it goes sometimes. So, I mean, at this point I'm just rooting for them to do as well as they can on like a game by game basis. Cause it's just, like you said, it's fun to watch like players do well and like make shots and do cool stuff and have like big games and lead the team to like comebacks or like blowouts over the Milwaukee Bucks. Like that game was like sick. Like I didn't even watch it, but like I was checking up the game cast on my phone like the whole time being like, all right, this is sweet. Like I was like, this is very cool. Like they are smoking like what is one of the best teams in the East right now. Like you can't, like obviously that's going to be traded in for, you know, close losses to Indiana, like a blowout loss to Memphis. So they're not going to just beat every good team every time. Like these are, it's going to trade itself in at one point or another. So it's definitely fun when you can get those types of games in, I think.
No, I'm with you. I've gone, well, the Hornets this year, I think I made this comparison earlier this year. This season's been very reminiscent of the Pacers last year, where they were supposed to be like a competitive, if like not a contending team, but a competitive team, and then everything just kind of fell apart for not really any real explicable reason. People just got hurt and players play underperformed, and then they're just like, well, we're bad now. And they got Mathurin out of it, and then they traded Sabonis, and it's all kind of working out for them. But like, and I don't think, and they had that one bad year, and now they're like, all right, let's see how we can win games. And I think that's kind of the way to go, right? Like if stuff doesn't go your way and things fall apart, you try to use that as kind of a jump off point, which I don't know if this, you know, 76ers process or this thing the Thunder are doing is a sustainable way to actually, like, it sounds so good in theory, but I always make the joke or the comment, it's like, the step one, get rid of everybody that's a good basketball player. Step two, acquire lots of first round picks. Step three, question mark. Step
like,
four,
championships. Wait. yeah, right. It's like
right, like no wait. That like in between step. Just I've never seen that like really clearly communicated by anyone that advocates for like aggressive tanking. Where like
it's never panned out. Literally once the Sixers are the quote unquote best example, and look where that's gotten them. A whole bunch of like first and second round exits. They haven't even made the conference finals with Joel Embiid, and they had to trade Ben Simmons. Like what, like and, that, if that's what that gets you, then why are you doing it?
Right. Cause you can do that any other, that's that people
you can do that and not, you can do that on accident as we're seeing right now. Like,
right. It's and then it, with the lottery, it all is lucky anyway with how that all pans out. But it's just like the Hornets just keep trying to win, hope that they get some more ping pong ball luck. And even then, you just kind of have to hope that the player you end up with ends up being better than expected. Because very rarely are players that are like focal points of teams, are they expected to be as good as they are, right? Like, you know, like the Celtics have Tatum, who was going to be really good, but I don't know if people saw MVP player when Jason Tatum got picked. And
no,
then,
I don't, especially like early Celtics fans, early in his career. I don't think Celtics fans especially thought that.
Right. I think people, I or think Celtics Brown, fans are upset. Like, yeah. I think Celtics fans were probably upset that they traded away from getting Markelle Fultz to take Tatum instead.
Oh, yeah. Originally, yeah. Like, that's the type of thing. Like, the Sixers were making like the right trade there or whatever. Yeah. Like, they moved up to, and they were like tanking and blah, blah, blah. And they got the last piece. And like, again, like, that was the right pick. Look how it worked out. Like, you can do the right thing, even if it's, and it just still won't work out for you. So this is just not, it's not worth rooting for, like, oh, tank, be terrible, tear it down, blah, 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 lose on purpose. It's just not worth it.
It is funny seeing that I've like on Hornets Twitter and stuff. It's like, oh, Hornets need to tear it down. It's like, we haven't even built anything yet.
No, they're like, they have, I like pretty much every player on this team. They have one guy that's like a guarantee to like make an all-star game in his career. Obviously he already has, but I would say that LaMelo is a guarantee to make another one. Other than that, there's nobody on this team that even approaches that level. So like, yeah, what would you be tearing down? Like, it's you're still building it. It's just that building it didn't go the way that you thought it would for, like we said, a lot of reasons that, you know, are some of them inexplicable, some of them uncontrollable, some of them whatever. But we are here.
I think it's much easier than people give it credit for to just pivot and then just like, just keep trying to get better. Like, obviously, you can't, like, go all in to, like, say this season is the season we'll be as good as we can be. But if you just, like, continually make moves to try to make your team better year over year and set yourself up to continue to improve, eventually you just have to wait for, like, the pieces to fall in correctly and get a lucky break and, like do what the Cavs did. They had, like, they only had one or two down years without LeBron after LeBron left the second time. And then it's just, like, Darius Garland broke out. They got a good pick in Evan Mobley. They got lucky in the timing that Donovan Mitchell came available, and they had enough to get Donovan Mitchell out of Utah. And now they're like fun and frisky. Like, they didn't have to, like, there's no sit there, be a bottom feeder and draft four future superstars in a row and then let them all become future superstars. That just doesn't work.
Yeah, the Thunder, the Houston Rockets are a great example of it right now. It's just like a bunch of guys that don't want to pass each other the ball because they're all trying to establish themselves in the NBA and like earn that next contract and earn their minutes and like accolades and whatnot. Like that, it doesn't work in real life. It works in your head.
It's funny because people get very excited about what the Thunder have done and what the Rockets have done. And they're like, look at all this talent they've acquired. And they're still like two of the bottom, like four or five teams in the NBA.
Right.
Like, they're just as bad as the Hornets this year.
Yeah. Like the Thunder are getting a little bit friskier, but they have the eighth best lottery odds right now. Like how the Hornets are the third best, and everything that they have done is like by accident. And they have also, like, you would think that, like, the vibes that surround these fan bases, like, you'd think the Hornets have won two games and the Thunder are, like, in the playoffs right now. Like, but they're not that far apart. Like, they're really not.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, that season as it's, so I guess to wrap it up, just, I guess, let the chips fall where they may, right? Like, the Hornets are bad enough. They'll be in a decent enough position for the lottery to shake out when we get there. Hopefully, like, there is a point coming where I think you have to, like, start doing the whole tanking thing, but not the whole play the youth type of guy, see what we yeah. got in guys type of thing. Just because it becomes a pointless exercise to have, like, if we're past, like, the trade deadline and Mason Plumlee's still on the roster, like, I guess you could say owe it to them because they're vets and they're trying to earn the contracts and stuff, but, like, you do need to, like, plan for the future and see what guys have. And that will come with it more losses, but there is a legitimate case on its own to just say, like, hey, maybe we need to, like, give James Bouknight some minutes, even if he sucks, just to see if he can figure it out with consistent playing time. Or, like, Nick Richards and Mark Williams, like, is this center pairing just them two something that can, like, be successful and stuff like that? Like, there is utility in seeing that later on. But I don't think there's any rush to get into it right now. Their Hornets aren't, like, missing out on anything by playing Mason Plumlee and trying to get Gordon Hayward back and letting Terry Rozier take a lot of shots and stuff like that.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, we've already gotten to see it. Like, Steve Clifford said it in one of his press conferences after a recent game or before a recent game. Like, nobody on the team hasn't gotten a shot. Like, everyone has played. Everyone's gotten a real role. Nobody's going in with, like, 6 minutes left in a blowout. Like, everybody's played in, like, the first quarter and gotten, like, a real chance to contribute to the lineup. Some players have done well with it. Some have not. That is not only the nature of, like, basketball, that is the nature of life. Like, some people, <Right. laughs> some people succeed with their opportunities and some people do not. Like, unfortunately, the people that do not will be, like, moved on from in some way or sit on the bench and just not play or whatever. Like, it's unfortunate, but nobody has not gotten a shot. Like, and that was something that I think people were really worried about with Steve Clifford coming into the year. It has not panned out that way whatsoever. He's been a great, like, you know, player development, like, invest in the youth coach so far.
Yep. Yeah. Everybody, and, like, injuries have contributed to that too, but, like,
yeah, right. I still think some of these guys would play. He raved about James Bouknight, like, that he was going to find a way.
No, because, like, Kai Jones got a bunch of rotation minutes, and then JT Thor sat on the bench, and then JT Thor got some minutes, and Kai Jones has been on the bench, and, like, Nick Richards got minutes, Mark Williams sat, and so on and so forth. Like, he's kind of cycled through guys to give people different chances in different places, even regardless of who's available. And, yeah, I think so far no one's really taken – I think Mark Williams is the only player that's really – and Bryce – well – Bryce McGowan's the two two-way guys, Bryce McGowan's and Teo Maladon play well. And then Mark Williams. I don't know if anybody else really of the guys that are, like, outside of the rotation to start the year have really shown any reason to not, like, to get more minutes than they were originally allocated to start.
Yeah, I guess if you count Nick Richards in that group, but he was the backup center to start the year anyway. So he's the oldest of that bunch of players as well too. So
right. Like, Bouknight was bad. Kai Jones is fine, but not, like... Kai Jones, I just don't trust. Like, he's an athletic freak, and he can do some crazy things. I don't know how reliable of a player he is, like, decision-making-wise.
I think his feel for the game is not consistently there. Like, it is there at times, like, when he makes... Yeah. He'll, like, jump a passing lane for a steal and then take it the full court and do a friggin' reverse dunk over the rim in crunch time. Like, that type of stuff is incredible, but, like, there are moments where you can tell, like, he hasn't really played a ton in the NBA in his career. He started basketball late, so this specific, like, fault and, like, aspect of his skill set that was lacking was to be expected even this far into his career, I think.
Right. Yeah. And I think his role to me seems like guy that comes in and just, like, wrecks stuff off the bench, just using his physical tools and his effort and his motor and stuff. But he's not a guy that you, like, put out there with an expectation of he's going to, like, create anything or, like, read the games at a super, super high level and, like, trust to play for, like, 36 minutes a night or anything. Like, he's a guy that's going to come in and just, like, give a bunch of energy and do a bunch of crazy stuff and be really good. He's got a ton of talent. It's just, like I said, he just, I don't know. He's kind of like Kelly Oubre. He reminds me of Kelly Oubre, where I just, like, the decisions he makes on the floor, I'm like, I guess that worked, but I don't think you can do that all the time and continue to have it work.
Yeah, that's definitely understandable. But I mean, I'll take it with the results that we've gotten so far. I think the hits are they've been pretty good so far, and I think they're gonna keep coming eventually as the season.
Yeah, and I think he'll get more, and I think he'll get more burn. Yeah. The problem he has is that like Mark Williams has been good, and Nick Richards has been good, and then he's been kind of playing before, and I don't think he can. I don't think
that's my one gripe with like how he's used. I mean, there's really not an option because the other two guys have been good, but he's got to play somewhere. But that is a little a bit unfortunate for him that he has to be like pigeonholed into a position that he probably doesn't. I mean, when he plays with the Swarm, he plays five the entire time. So
Because that's what you want him doing, right? Like he can attempt some pick and pop threes or trailer threes, but you want him like as a dive man in the role and protecting the rim and going after rebounds and all that stuff. So, did you have anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. I think that about wraps it up for us. I don't know if there's anything you got to touch on either.
Nah, I think that's about it. Appreciate you guys sticking out. You guys are true Hornets fans to not only watch the Hornets right now, but consume like Hornets content on the internet voluntarily. So we appreciate you for that. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, we'll see you guys later.
Thanks for listening, everybody.